Hello and welcome to Your Best Self, a podcast about careers. I'm your host, Faye Rowlands, lawyer and journalist, and together in this podcast, we'll hear from inspirational people spanning the worlds of business, politics, law, media, science, art, and more, sharing what they love most about their jobs, how they handle setbacks, and offer listeners their tips to career success. I hope this podcast informs and inspires you to think big and encourages you to go after the dream job you want. My guest on this week's episode is Minister of State for Special Education and Inclusion, Josepha Madigan. Many of you will know her as an Irish Fine Gael politician. Madigan is also a qualified solicitor. She spent 20 years practicing law and running her own firm before being elected to Dáil Éireann in 2016. She quickly established herself as a rising political figure within the party and was just 3 weeks in office when the former Taoiseach, Enda Kenny, invited her to partake in government formation talks. As a backbench TD, she initiated a private members' bill that would ultimately go to a referendum and reduce the divorce waiting time in Ireland from 4 years to two. In 2017, Madigan became the first female lawyer appointed to the Irish Cabinet, where she served as the Minister for Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht for 2.5 years. I spoke with Madigan late last year and she told me why she decided to go into politics, the difficulties of life in the public eye and why we need more women at the decision-making table in politics in Ireland. I hope you enjoy the episode. Josepha Madigan, thank you so much for speaking with me today on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Delighted to be here.
Delighted to speak with you. So I think a lot of our listeners will be aware of you and conscious of you from your public profile, your political profile and your rapid rise through the political ranks. But I think perhaps they might be curious to know a little bit about you and what you were like growing up as a child.
I suppose you'd have to really ask my parents that. Well, my dad died a few years ago, but my mum, I think I was a good child overall. I had like four younger sisters and an older brother. So there were six children in the family. So I would have been like a second mum, being the eldest of five girls, really. So there was a lot of work going on in the home. I think I was a good kid, you know, overall. Liked everybody, got on with everyone. I think there was so much going on with the other children, but really the focus wasn't too much on me a lot of the time.
And was it a political household growing up?
Yeah, my dad had been a Fianna Fáil councillor and he had topped the poll in Blackrock a couple of times and then he resigned from Fianna Fáil over the property tax, which he said was an iniquitous tax at the time, and he became an independent. Unfortunately, it wasn't the time for independence like it is now. And he stood in the general election, he stood in the European election, and he stood in the Shannon election, but he actually didn't get elected to any of those positions. So, in fact, if anything, he was going to put me off politics because I saw the disappointment that he went through and, you know, how difficult it was and, you know, even being involved in campaigns and everything else. So it's obviously through osmosis, I absorbed a lot and learned a lot from him, but probably more what not to do than as opposed to what to do.
And then you went on to college in Trinity, you studied French and German there, went on to qualify and ultimately practice as a solicitor. Was it always inevitable for you that you were going to go into law and have a career in law? Or what was it about law that attracted you?
Yeah, I think I resisted law a little bit because my mum was a barrister. My dad was a solicitor. In fact, 6 out of 8 of us in the house are lawyers. So I was really loved languages. I still love French and German and even Irish and English. And so languages were my first love. But then I spent a summer with my dad in his office, his solicitor's office in Raglan Road at the time. And I became hooked and I realised, no, it's law that I really want to do. So I did that then for 20 years and it was a great career. I won Family Lawyer of the Year at the Irish Law Awards in 2014. And then I left and went into politics.
And as you said, so you'd had this incredibly successful career, practising nearly 20 years as a lawyer, running your own law firm. What was it that prompted you to make that move into politics?
It was really the recession. I remember just watching the TV and just seeing the whole economy imploding, and I had clients going through just a horrendous time who'd lost everything. And when people are separating as well, it's just a double whammy. And I just said, this can't happen again. And my children at the time, I think they were about 4 and 6, I had two boys. And I said, you know, it's time for me now to get up off the couch and actually do something to help. I suppose in a certain extent, even though my dad was Fianna Fáil, it was very much not to make sure Fianna Fáil didn't get back in office. So the only person I could think of was Olivia Mitchell, who'd actually taught in our respective alma mater in Mount Anville. I think she taught economics there. So I rang her and arranged to canvass for her in the 2011 general election. And then she got elected and I just joined the branch and I joined the constituency. But I still never had an intention of getting, involved, but not as a politician.
So you began your political career as a local councillor. And just 2 years later then, you found yourself in Dáil Éireann, elected as a TD. And only 1 year after that, you found yourself at the cabinet table. All of that took place over a relatively short period. What was that experience like for you going through it at that time?
Yeah, it was really quick. The councillor position came around. Olivia Mitchell looked at me and she said, you know, would you be interested in going? And my head said no, and my heart said yes. I went first. So for a year and a half, I was a councillor in Dún Laoghaire Town, as well as being a full-time lawyer. And then the space came up for the general election, because Olivia was stepping down, so there's a space and a ticket. But just because there's no ticket, there's no guarantee of getting elected. But I got elected, and Shatter lost his seat. And yes, I wasn't even 2 years a TD when Leo Bradker contacted me one morning at 8:20 to say that he was promoting me to cabinet. And that was on the back of Francis Fitzgerald's resignation. So, you know, from that perspective, it wasn't nice to have to replace particularly another woman at cabinet. But no, it was a real privilege and a real honour. I have to say, I served at cabinet for 2.5 years.
As we noted earlier, you progressed to your ministerial role within a relatively short time frame. What do you attribute that success to?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the usual things. It's hard work, really, ultimately. I had published 2 private members' bills, which was practically unheard of for a backbencher in a really short space of time. And obviously, yes, my legal training helped with that. So I had one private member's bill about reducing the divorce time from 4 years to 2. And the other one was a private member's bill around contempt of court. So ensuring that online platforms can't publish material that will in any way compromise the outcome of a criminal trial like mainstream media can't. So that's actually still hasn't been resolved. The divorce bill ended up going to a referendum, which was really successful. So I think it was down to that and just being, you know, a good media performer and you'd have to ask Leo Bradker, really, I suppose, the real reasons. But yeah, that's it really in a nutshell.
So you don't get to those senior levels in government without having experienced some setbacks and disappointments along the way. How did you respond to those challenges when they came your way and what did you learn from them?
Yeah, of course I've had disappointments. You know, there was one particular scandal, for want of a better word, where I was in the eye of the storm. And even though it was through no fault of my own, you're sort of dragged into these controversies sometimes in the middle of a media maelstrom. And that was quite difficult because I couldn't say anything at the time, because I had acted as a lawyer for this person, and due to solicitor-client confidentiality, I couldn't breach that. So I did find that very difficult. And obviously, losing my place at cabinet this July wasn't very pleasant either, because there just weren't enough spaces. We only had 7 places for Fine Gael and we had to have a geographical spread. And as a Dublin TD, that sort of went against me. But having said that, the position I'm in now as Minister of State for Special Education, my budget is 2 billion a year. And if you think as a senior minister, my budget was 330 million. So I've actually 3 times the budget and a lot more responsibility, because the area of special needs is really, really deserves a lot of work. So it's a real privilege at the same time to be the first dedicated minister for this area.
And you mentioned earlier there criticism, and I suppose that is something that is part and parcel of public life. How do you deal with that aspect of public life?
I think it depends who you are as a person. I would consider myself, I'm not 20, 30, I'm 50 years, 51 years of age. I'm quite resilient at this point in my life. I lost my dad and my sister within 4 years of each other at the same time as me being, going from the Dáil into Cavan. So there's a huge amount, and also leaving my practice after 20 years, which in itself is a grief. So there were a number of things going on, but I'm quite a strong person inside. And, I think for me, if I'm principled in what I'm doing and I believe what I'm doing is right, then no matter what the noise is around me, I'll just block that out. And, on social media, you just mute. That's the easiest thing to do.
I think it's interesting to hear, because very often, we look from the outside in at people who've had very successful careers. And I suppose we don't always see maybe the struggles that they've had behind the scenes to get to where they are. And that's something that I think very much young people starting out can overlook. They can look to somebody who's doing extremely well, and maybe they don't see that those struggles that they've had to overcome.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's that classic, phrase, it's not what happens to you in life, it's how you deal with it. And that for me is very true. And you just try to do what's in front of you, and you try to do that well, and try and make the best sometimes of bad situations. But, I think for women in particular, it is difficult. I think politics is a very difficult arena. As a senior minister, I was working 90-hour weeks. And when you have two teenage children, it's extremely difficult, because you're coming home and you're still thinking of what Hillary Clinton used to allude to as emotional labour. The things like the birthday present for the child, or, for a party they're going to, or the taking the meat out of the freezer, or, bathroom tissue, small things like that. But they're things that women, unfortunately, have to think of. And even though I believe in a meritocracy, I do think some measures like gender quotas and things like that really need to be developed and expanded even further, so that we get that critical mass of women, because we're only at 22.5% at the moment in Dáil Éireann, which is probably the world average, really, in national parliaments. But it's just so low. It's so low. I mean, you think of my legal background, there are more females now, 51%. Females in the solicitor's profession than men, and even at the bar as well, there's a considerably lot more female.
And what is it about politics, do you think, that is just lagging behind? You mentioned there the legal profession and other professions, and I think the medical profession as well, are catching up in terms of gender equality. But what is it about, the political arena that people, just women in particular, don't seem to be as keen to take part in that area of political life?
Well, when you think about it, you wouldn't blame them. I mean, it's the scrutiny. It's public. So that's probably the first thing. So they know, they read about people every day having to resign, or, having to come into the Dáil and answer questions. They're judged on how they look. They're judged on what they say. You're constricted in so many ways. So, unless you're very strong, it's not something I would recommend. Having said that, we as women have to be confident, and we have to believe that we have something to offer. And just because it's an adversarial environment, I mean, law is adversarial, particularly family law, at the best of times, just because it's adversarial doesn't mean we don't have something to say. It's not that we're any better, but, we're just different. But we have something really fundamentally important to offer. And just because, you are under scrutiny and you are in the public arena, it doesn't mean it's not a career that you should pursue. But it's always worth talking, I think, to somebody who's gone through that journey before.
Is there anybody who you feel has really inspired you in your political career?
Yeah, funny enough, they're all women, and I a husband and two sons, so I love men, but I suppose that there are so few of us in politics that, I would really admire Jacinta Ardern. I think that would be universally, people really respect her. I do too. I think she brings this incredible empathy and compassion to political life, and I'd really like to see that translated here. I'm not sure how the media treat her. So maybe there might be more irreverence there that is severely lacking in other countries. But I really like her. I really like Angela Merkel as well. And even though some of her decisions have been tough, in terms of allowing, you know, immigrants come into the country. And, you know, then she was accused of, you know, making the wrong decision about that. I still think she did the right thing, and I admire her for that.
So you think we need to see more women at the decision-making table in political life?
Oh, completely. I mean, if you don't see it, you know, you can't be it. And, you know, I go to a lot of schools and I really say that message, because, you know, there's a huge piece of data and a body of work that could be done about the amount of female Irish parliamentarians who only come in for one term into either Dáil Éireann or Shannadarn, and they never come back. And why do they never come back? And Mary Beard has a wonderful book about women in power, and she talks about, you know, the system itself, and if the structure of the system is designed for men, you know, it's just not going to work for women, you know, whether it's long hours, you know, like working to 1 o'clock in the morning, you know. So it's one would almost think there's a conspiracy to keep women out. Now there isn't, but we just have to find a way to bring ourselves forward. And if we look at the Irish Constitution, I think it's Article 41.2, and it talks about the woman's place in the home. And, you know, that's a really anachronistic type of clause, and it's archaic. And it's effectively saying, when you read it as a working mother, that you're neglecting your household duties by going out to work. And it's a really regressive symbol to be showing Ireland and to be showing Ireland's women and young girls that, you know, really your place is really at home. And so that has to be removed for society to fundamentally change, in my view.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose childcare also plays a role in that as well, doesn't it? You know, allowing women that freedom to be able to go out to work as well.
Oh, absolutely. And men have become better at that and helping with childcare. But it's women themselves as well. You know, we tend to sit back a little bit and we're sort of, you know, I meet women a lot of the time. Some of my friends are interested, some aren't, but some will say, oh, your politics has nothing to do with me. And it's trying to, I suppose, get them to understand that actually it has everything to do with you, and every political decision will have an effect in your life. And so there's no luxury anymore when we look around the world, what was happening with Trump in the USA and Boris Johnson in the UK, and we have Erdogan, and we have, you know, this rise of the far right. You know, there was a time in Ireland where everybody was political, because you had to be, and you're very survival dependent on it. And I think that we have to get back to those times. So, you know, it's not that I'm advocating for people to join Fine Gael necessarily, but just to get involved in a party, or get involved in supporting the politician if you don't want to get involved in a party, or be an independent. But, you know, we have to, because the wheels don't change by themselves. We need fresh thinking. We need new people in all of the time. And, you know, people and politicians have to be accountable as well. So I don't think there's any difficulty with that.
And obviously you mentioned there you have kids, that being a politician is a very demanding career. Physically, there are very long hours. How do you juggle those two things together?
Yeah, well, strangely, in COVID, it's been a little bit easier because I have my weekends free. I never, ever had a weekend free for a long time. In fact, if I had two or three hours on a Sunday afternoon, I would have thought that was a luxury. So now the fact that I might have a whole Saturday and a whole of a Sunday, give or take a few, you know, Zoom calls and emails, that's really wonderful. You know, Tuesday to Thursday is when the Dáil sits, and they're usually quite long hours. So it's always like a week concentrated into 3 days. And so last night I was on the Tonight Show on Virgin Media TV for an hour. So I didn't get home to maybe 11:30 or 12:00. But, you know, you try to pack as much as you can into those 3 days and then take it a little bit easier the rest of the time. But you're always dealing with constituents. It's a 24/7 job. My way of dealing with that is trying to walk the dog. And she's snoring here on the couch behind me. And so I try to bring her out and get some fresh air in the woods, and just, you know, that's really good for your mental health as well.
And where do you think you get that sense of drive and that work ethic? Where does that come from?
I'm not really sure. You know, even when I was in school in Mount Anvil, I was president of the Needs of Our World Association. And so I always had the sense of different cultures and, you know, trying to help the wider world. I always felt it wasn't just about looking after us or me. It's about the wider community. So that was just in me. And I debated in school I was on the school debating team as well. And then obviously law helped. And I get a real sense of fulfillment. Even though, of course, politicians are paid well, there is more money obviously in the private sector, but that's not what drives me. What drives me is actually that sense of fulfillment, I think, that I do when I do something good for somebody. So the divorce referendum, you know, I've helped thousands of people with that, where, you know, they don't have to wait 4 years now. They only have to wait 2 years before they can apply for a divorce. And that saved them so much time and money and acrimony and just unnecessary labour that they didn't need. So that was a great feeling to be able to have done that. And so even if I left tomorrow, that's already a legacy that I've changed the constitution and everybody voted for it. So one person can make a difference. And, you know, I just try to do, my modus operandi is just trying to do what's in front of me and trying to do that well. And everything else follows from that, I think. And my faith is really important to me too. I'm not a holy Joe faith, but I do, you know, obviously do believe in God, and I do believe in trying to help, you know, while I'm here and doing the best we can.
Are those sort of the aspects of the job then that you really enjoy in the role? I mean, I know obviously we've already gone through some of the more difficult aspects of the role that you have to contend with, but what are some of the aspects that you really enjoy and find fulfilling?
Yeah, it is that. I mean, as Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world, you know, and so to be able, like with special needs now, with children with special needs, you know, we're bringing in a school inclusion model where we have a sort of a tailored therapeutic wraparound service for children within the school environment, with like occupational therapists and speech and language therapists and behaviour and crisis practitioners. And that would completely revolutionise the experience for a child with special needs in Ireland. And I'm hoping to do that over a three-year period. Like the fulfilment that I will get from that if I deliver it, there's no words for that. I mean, you know, and even though, and I worry sometimes about the rhetoric around politics and around politicians in particular, this toxic narrative that can develop, but it's still a very noble profession. And I still think it's the profession where you can make a radical change with the stroke of a pen. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be bombastic or aggressive in your approach. You just need to be persuasive. You need to be able to bring people with you and use your negotiation, mediation, collaborative skills. And with the legal background, those skills are very easily transferable. So I'm always looking for young female lawyers to get involved as well into politics, because I think we have an awful lot to give. So that's really it. It's just to help people, ultimately. That's the bottom line.
Do you need to have a thick skin for going into politics?
You know, I think there's a perception as well. I mean, obviously, there has to be an element of ego to be able to succeed in politics. But I'm probably actually more of an introvert than an extrovert. You know, I'm a total bibliophile. I like my quiet time. I like reading my books and, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm actually not as much as an extrovert as people would think. So that limelight, that spotlight can be difficult for someone like that. But it is a necessary evil and something that you have to do in order to achieve what you want to achieve. So you put that to the side, but it might take a little bit more work for me than it might for somebody who just adores that. So, and I think that's an important point, because not everybody does it. Everybody gets involved in politics for different reasons. But I do think the majority of people, you know, bring their bona fides to the table and want to try and help ameliorate the world in some way.
And what would you say is your proudest achievement in politics to date?
Probably the divorce referendum. I'd have to say that. I mean, I think it was 81% of the population voted for it. But also, when I was a senior minister, and I was only in situ for about 4 months, Leo Varadkar asked me to lead the campaign for repealing the 8th. So I was director of elections for the Yes campaign for Fine Gael, and that was a really difficult referendum. And I was literally thrown into the deep end, because it was only just in cabinet also. So there's dealing with a huge amount, dealing with different sides, different views. So to bring that to a resolution and a successful resolution was really something. And I was so conscious of the responsibility on my shoulders with so many activists for years who had wanted to repeal that. So it was great to be part of that. I think for women, I find that a lot of the time they mightn't apply for a position because they feel they have to know absolutely everything about that position. But once they're in the position, they forget that you learn when you're in it as well. And I think that's an important point. And I've surprised myself with what I've been able to learn as I go into each day.
And then looking to the future, what political aspirations would you have for the future?
It's a really difficult question, Faye, because I never expected to be a politician. It was never a grand plan. I just followed my heart literally into this. And even though I wasn't sure if it was the right thing for me, I sort of know now that it is. I'm just taking each day as it comes. My main priority, obviously, is special needs and trying to help those families that are on a journey with a child with special needs, that they can access the services they need, that they can make sure that they get a place in a school. So that's my kind of immediate short-term priority. For myself, obviously, I'd like to be back at Cabinet. I hope that I will get that opportunity. And if not, well, you know, I'll see where best I can serve. It's public service and, you know, you accept that. And the only Cabinet minister, former Cabinet minister, to accept a Minister of State position. And some people didn't want to do it. But to me, no one should ever refuse a ministry, even if you feel you're above that ministry. You know, it's a real privilege at the end of the day.
And then what advice would you give to maybe a younger person who is curious about entering political life? They would like to learn more about it. What advice would you give for someone who would be potentially looking at going that direction in the future?
Well, I have my own personal views about that. I mean, I personally think it's worthwhile having experience outside of politics. So there are some who will, you know, get involved in Young Fine Gael or Ógra Fianna Fáil or whatever party it is and build that network and, you know, work maybe as a parliamentary assistant or a secretarial assistant for an established politician and learn the ropes that way. But then you've no experience from any other type of work, which I think is invaluable for me being self-employed, apart from the business aspect, not just the practice of law, bringing that in. And you see a lot of teachers coming in to politics and that kind of thing as well. And then on the other hand, there are some very successful politicians who have built up these alliances and networks from a very early age. Like if you think about it, I was like 45 when I went into politics, so it was quite late. And I did find that difficult. I didn't have that network, that boys' network that men have established for decades because I was rearing my children and, you know, all of those things. So that is hard. And, you know, I didn't go into politics to make friends and everyone's, you know, very pleasant and all of that. So I'm sort of conflicted about it, really. I think maybe if you could get involved in the organisation but still have another job and then maybe later in life, because when you're thrown into Dáil Éireann in particular, councillor level, not so much local level, but national politics, you really are under scrutiny. And if you're, you know, I was able to handle it because I was older. But for someone very young coming in, it wouldn't be easy for them if something was to go wrong or they said the wrong thing. And but you're only ever one interview away from that, if you like. So that's what I would say to them. And also, you know, talk to as many people as they can about the pluses and minuses of the profession itself. But I will never regret getting involved in politics, no matter what happens to me in the future, because I know that I've done some good. And that to me is the bottom line.
And just one final question. What qualities do you think you need to be successful in politics?
Resilience, as we said. Forgiveness too. I think you can't go around bearing grudges. It is a dog-eat-dog environment. There's no point saying it isn't. And often it's the behind the scenes that people don't see. So they see one aspect, but they don't see the other sides to it. But you have to be able to deal with people, even people that you mightn't like. And, you know, that's just reality. And so I think forgiveness is important as well, being able to compromise, being a diplomat, you know. So, you know, just keeping your counsel at times as well and not being too trusting and also being trustful as well. So there's a balance there. I think having a bit of world experience it will really stand you in good stead. And for me, what has never let me down is my intuition. I have a really heightened intuition, and I think that's just over years of sort of listening and learning and observing and knowing people and getting a feel for people. And I think if you trust that, it won't let you down either.
Well, listen, Josepha Madigan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
It was a pleasure, Faye. It was lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Your Best Self. If you enjoyed this podcast, please hit the subscribe button or leave me a review.